The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 149.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show, a good buddy of mine. I was just hanging out with him in Puerto Rico. We were checking out the area for Act 20 and 22. He is a rock star digital entrepreneur. And the Rebel Capitalist Show is all about macro personal freedom. It's all about making money. And that's where entrepreneurship comes into play. So I'm super stoked to welcome my good buddy, Eric Sue. Eric, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, George. Thanks for that kind introduction. I'm going to try to do as much as I can, maybe in three simple steps for your audience.
There you go. You know, Mike Maloney was nice enough to give me a shout out the other day on one of his videos, and he did that. He's like, George is going to explain it to you in three simple, fast steps. So there you go. But for my viewers who might not know your backstory, can you get us up to speed there? And then I'd love to hear the story about how you got interested in macro and maybe Bitcoin and gold and then Act 22. We'll just take it from start to finish, the whole journey.
Yeah, you just stopped me, and I'll try to talk faster and get through this thing. Coming out of college, Asian parents, they expect you to get a good job, become a lawyer, doctor, whatever. It's the template, right? Here in LA, they want you. And by the way, I am moving to Puerto Rico, but they're like, you got to go to at least UCLA or whatever. So you grow up, thinking you have to follow this template or else you're a complete failure. And even my parents a couple of weeks ago, they're like, yeah, you are a complete failure. Yeah. So like, no matter what, they still think I was bad. But anyway, school was never really for me, but I still managed to finesse my way into a pretty good school over here in California, UC San Diego. Okay. Graduated right as the Great Financial Crisis. What is it? 2008 or so. Okay. So that happens. And then the best job I could get coming out of college was a $32,000 a year job doing a data entry, right? So this is a good public school. That's the best I can do. So immediately I knew something was wrong. And then from there, one of my friends was like, oh, you should check out this digital marketing thing. Long story short, I picked up an internship. From there, I never really looked back. Within 2 years, I was leading marketing at a startup. Long story short, there was we had a great product with a great team. We just didn't have great marketing. I basically bet the entire company. So you and I talked about gambling a little bit. I was like, okay, you're going to fire me in a month anyway. All in, everything on YouTube ads. It worked out, company took off, and then, we raised our Series B, everyone's jobs was saved, just on that big bet. And so as we progress, by this time, I'm already 26, 27 years old. And, my podcast co-host for the Marketing School podcast, Neil, he tells me, hey, you should come help save this company called Single Grain, which is the ad agency that I own now. Come into the company, end up taking over, and, when I first came in, I owned 10% of the company. Okay. A year goes by, and then the four partners, Neil included, it was one yellow guy, me, and then four brown guys. So it was four Indians. And I'm friends with all of them, by the way, still. And they decide that they want out. So at 27 years old, I negotiate my first M&A deal. I put in air quotes right here. Bought Neil's shares for $1 for 10%. Another, his partner's shares, $1 for 10%. The rest were paid through the profits of the company, with the contingency of if the company failed, I would own nothing. So I went 27 years old, still had no idea what I was doing, went from 10% to 100% of the company with the whole idea that I would take this cash flow business, which is an ad agency, I would take the cash flows and reinvest it into everything else that I thought was, better business models, right? More exponential business models. So that's always been my goal in the beginning. And I always thought that, the worst case scenario was I would learn a lot and I would fail and I'd go get a good job. And almost did fail. And, thankfully turned it all around, which has led now to, we have the ad agency still, we have a CEO that runs that. I have the Marketing School podcast, which I do with Neil. I have the Leveling Up podcast, which, talk to great people like you. I just learn a lot. And then I have the software company ClickFlow, and then a couple other projects that I work on. And then also use the cash flows again to invest into, the things that we talk about, right? Whether it's real estate or, you know, Bitcoin or whatever, or other companies.
When you're taking those cash flows, Eric, from single grain originally, you were taking them and reinvesting them into different, into growing the business with different revenue streams, or you're taking those cash flows and investing them in completely separate businesses?
Yeah, so that's a really important question. So in the very early days, I was reinvesting it back in the business. And then what ended up happening was I was like, okay, so business is stabilized now. I should go reinvest it, or I should go invest it in other areas where the money would be put to work in a better way, right? I'll get a better return that way. And okay. Here's the thing they never teach you in school. It was always, and I just put something on Instagram today. It's, you know, people talk about taxation and everything. People complain about Amazon. I'm like, in the very beginning, I was just like, it doesn't make sense to try to realize the gains right now. I'm just going to keep reinvesting as much as I can. And you look at Amazon, they just take all the cost centers and they make them into profit centers, and they just keep redeploying. So I think, again, it's a lot of the counterintuitive stuff you don't really learn until you start start in business or start in actually investing. I think a lot of things we learn in school are just wrong.
Oh, geez. That's an understatement for sure. So now you've got this podcast with Neil Patel, who, if for my viewers who might not know Neil, he's someone who's extremely well known in your space as well. He's a real, real smart guy. I really love that daily podcast. In fact, I was telling you when I first met you that I always used to listen to that Medellin when I go to the gym at the Charlie. That was kind of my go-to podcast. It was just quick, like 5-7 minutes. You just knock it out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really great. So you've got these businesses, you've got these revenue streams, you've got a CEO for single grain. Now, where do we go with the progression? What's the next step where you start to realize that, okay, this macroeconomic thing, the Fed's got all this quantitative easing, the balance sheet, the government debt, the taxes here in California, this might not end well. What was kind of your red pill moment, if you will?
Yeah, the red pill moment. This is interesting. Before the cerveza sickness, I think that's what you call it on the channel. So before the cerveza sickness hit, Neil and I, we would talk on the podcast and we'd say, you know, all we do is we focus on business. We don't care for politics. We don't care about, you know, all this other stuff, right? And then right when it hit, I was like, holy crap. Like, I need to know what is going on. I have no idea what's going on right now, because the last time something like this hit, I was just coming into my first job. So I now I'm like, okay, I got to prepare. So that led me down the rabbit hole. I was looking at Robert Kiyosaki's stuff and he just kept mentioning your name. It's like, you got a George Gammon. And then I was looking at all these Daniel DiMartino Booth and all these guests that you had on your podcast. And I just started diving in as much as I could. And I found that your videos were the simplest to understand, right? It's pretty complex, but I started learning more and more. And then that's when I was like, holy crap, nobody's gonna come save you. You know, you have to cover your own ass. And whether it's looking at Act 20, 22, or whatever they call it now, Act 60 for Puerto Rico, looking at how California is just not sustainable anymore, you can feel it. And I think we've talked about it when you're on my podcast, that if you don't take action, if you're waiting to see what will happen, by that time, it's already too late. So I'm just like, okay, I'm going to jump ahead, because so far, all my predictions this year have been correct. And I prefer not to be correct, but I just want to be safe. So
yeah, got to have that plan B. So you were born and raised, or are born and raised, in California. How have you seen it change over the past, let's say, 2 decades?
Yeah, I'll tell you, even just this year. Okay, so in my home state, I've never really experienced much of anything around racism, right? So, you know, minority, if those of you can't see me right now on the podcast, you know, yellow person, right? So, I've grown up, I went to school in California, I grew up in LA, and I'll tell you right now, in downtown LA, just before it all hit, it was booming, right? You know, there are a lot of new restaurants coming up. There wasn't a big homeless situation around where I am right now in downtown LA. But just yesterday, when I was walking around, I was walking to my Whole Foods, which is like a block away. Mm-hmm. I saw tents set up. I saw there are a lot more homeless walking around. And I could tell you when this thing first hit, I felt a lot more eyes on me in general. So what I mean by that is, you can feel people dogging you or judging you And I was like, holy crap, this is a different feeling now. So I can tell you the homeless problem is a lot worse. The taxes are just going to go higher and higher. Right. I think the, I've never really complained. This will actually be the first time kind of complaining about how things are run here in terms of the government. But at a certain point, you know, you've had Andrew Henderson on your podcast. You have to vote with your feet. Yeah. And so even though I'm still going to be in America, you know, moving to Puerto Rico, I'm not on the mainland anymore. And when you and I were in Puerto Rico, it didn't feel like the mainland. It felt safe, even though the country is still trying to, you know, recover. But I'm just like, you know, all my buddies are going there. Seems like a lot of things are going in that direction. I'm going to make the move. And I can always, it's not irreversible, right? So Jeff Bezos always talks about, you know, type A, type B decisions. This is a very, you know, most decisions are type B, which are reversible. Type A is, you know, irreversible, right? So that's what it is.
Yeah. So you are in this space. A lot of your buddies are entrepreneurs and are job creators. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And I mean, I was fortunate enough to have a couple meals with you in Puerto Rico with a lot of these guys that you know well. These are bright guys that are making a lot of money and creating a lot of jobs and really pushing society forward. So and you kind of mentioned it there, but I'd like to kind of dive into that deeper. You said a lot of your friends are moving out of California. So I'm assuming you're talking about your friends that are these job creators that have just had enough with California and are looking for different options, whether it's Texas or Puerto Rico. And the reason I'm really harping on this is because I'm concerned that what is happening in California will take place all over the United States to varying degrees over the next couple of decades. So what are your thoughts on that? And am I safe to assume that all those people you're talking about are these entrepreneurial guys and gals?
That's correct. Yeah. So, you know, some of the people you met, I've known for a while, a lot of them moved from San Diego. And then there's two entrepreneur groups that I'm in, Entrepreneurs Organization and Young Presidents Organization. And what I basically did before I even visited, I was talking to my buddies that live there. I was like, hey, how many people are calling you each week asking about Puerto Rico? And these are all other entrepreneurs. And so before you and I met up, it was about 5 inquiries per week. When I got there, it had changed to 20 inquiries per week. So I'm looking at the leading indicators, or I guess it's kind of lagging, but it's like, holy crap, it's going to get bigger and bigger. I see it snowballing. And so, you know, and by the way, one of the friends that you met, he saw one of my Instagram stories, decides to book a ticket, flies over the next day, and we're having lunch in Puerto Rico. Yeah. So people are, and he bought a place. He's actually going to be my neighbor now in Puerto Rico, literally my neighbor next door.
You got to get lunch with?
Yeah. So the legal company. Yeah. So anyway, I think, you know, whether you look at the big names out there, you look at Joe Rogan, he's out, he's in Texas. You look at Elon Musk, he's out. You look at Ben Shapiro, he's moving, taking his business over to Tennessee. Graham Stephan's got a YouTube channel with 2 million followers, super smart guy.
I heard that the other day.
Yeah, he's out to Vegas. And I'm like, look, people are doing it. You know, again, they're voting with their feet. And so I think for people to say, oh, it's not going to be that bad, I think it's, you know, based on what you think it's going to be the same. And look at all the things that are happening. You got to educate yourself. You got to reprogram your brain right now, because if not, you're going to be left in the dust. So
that makes a lot of sense. Okay, let's transition the conversation into how the average person out there can take your experience and leverage that to make themselves more money. We always talk about investing and kind of growing your wealth or growing what you have, but we don't always talk about how to make money from scratch. And this is something you are an absolute pro at. So I really want to kind of get into that, get into the weeds and get your advice. And we can just start at a very basic level as to how you would suggest just the average people out there, whether they're, you know, 20 years old or 60 years old, create an online business or a side hustle or any business. It doesn't matter what's brick and mortar. How can they go about making additional money in this time that's so tumultuous and so volatile?
You know, I taught at a USC class yesterday. It was virtual. And, you know, all the kids were freaking out. I was like, how many of you are scared right now? Like 50% of hands go up. I'm like, how many of you are excited? Another like 50% of hands go up. So it's a good combination. But what I was telling them was, I was like, look, again, nobody is going to come save you. You have to defend for yourself. So I think starting, you know, having a business is, that's one thing, no matter what business you decide to do. But I think also looking at, you know, George, what you're doing with the content that you're creating, that is a compounding machine that doesn't stop. That to me is still investing. And Naval Ravikant always says there's four different ways to get leverage, right? There's, you have code, you have capital, you have media, and you have labor. A lot of people forget about the media piece. And so I think no matter where you start, I'm 20 years old right now. How do I get things going? Well, you know what? Start documenting your journey. Start, you know, let's call it journey to 1 million podcast. And then after you get to 1 million, journey to 10 million podcast. And you just document how you're doing things. And in, you know, 2-3 years or so, you're actually going to have enough experience where you are the expert. And then you can start to move over to teaching, right? And so, you know, again,
these are things you can do with a full-time job. It's not like you have to choose one or the other. It's something you can do evenings, weekends, while you're growing it, growing that audience. And then once you grow to a certain level, then maybe you can transition over. But it's always kind of a great plan B, as long as you're doing something that you enjoy talking about. I think that's probably key.
That's important. I mean, there's, do you know, you've had Anthony Pompliano on your podcast or no?
I have not. No, we've gone back and forth a couple times on Twitter, but I haven't had the opportunity. I'd love to in the future.
So he's great, super smart guy, but his brother is incredible too. So I don't know if you've been following his brother, but his brother's been tweeting about the intersection of between sports and business. Hmm. And his following has, like 12 weeks ago, he'd never produced content online. And now he's saying, just yesterday, he's like, oh, I'm quitting my job. I'm going to go full-time on content creation. He's got sponsors now. He's just got really good stuff going on. And obviously his brother has helped him. So
after 12 weeks.
12 weeks. Yeah. So, you know, all this to say is that, look, you start providing something that is, you put something out there that's interesting, that's unique, that's helpful to people. And if you don't think you can document the very beginning. And Gary Vee is a perfectly good example. He's, you know, he's a personality, but he's also a business guy too. And all he doesn't really think about topics to teach. He did that before, but he used to have a, before, you know, all this craziness hit. He would have a camera guy following him around, you know, two different camera guys following him around, and that would be his show. So I just don't think there's any excuse, because if you want to be protected moving forward, we have no idea what's going to happen in the next 12 to 18 months. Yeah. We kind of have a sense. But what's defensible long-term? It's your brand. It's your moat. You know, Warren Buffett talks about how, you know, it takes forever to build it up and how you can lose it in 5 minutes. Right. I'm just paraphrasing, but I think it's important. And so if you're good, look, Naval Ravikant, billionaire, founder of AngelList, built his following off of Twitter. You have Jason Lemkin, who's got the biggest software conference in the world, or software as a service conference, Saster. He built it off of Quora, right? For me, it was really off of, I would say, I would argue more of podcasts. For Neil, my podcast co-host, he started off blogging first. So just find what you're good at, start there, and then you can start to get more complex as things go on.
Yeah, so I think there's two takeaways there. Number one, you find a niche that you enjoy talking about. And I want to be very clear, this niche doesn't have to be broad. It doesn't have to be like health and fitness or cars or digital marketing or making money online. Look at my channel is a perfect example of that. I mean, who would have thought, you know, macroeconomics, it's the most esoteric thing. Who's going to want to find out about the repo market? Nobody.
Yeah.
But I've heard of people that have been wildly successful online that are in very, very small niches. I mean, like certain types, not just horseback riding, but like certain types of horseback riding. And then they niche down even further. And it's like fitness for certain types of horseback riders. And then, you know, it's not just dogs. It's about a certain type of dog or small dog. I mean, it's limitless. In fact, one of the gentlemen that we were fortunate enough to have dinner with in Puerto Rico, he's in the business of selling pet supplies, I believe, wasn't it?
Yep.
So it's this, he wasn't really on the content creation side, but he found this niche where he could, I think he buys, I don't know where he buys the pet supplies, but he's got this online store and I believe an Amazon store that he sells this, and he makes a ton of money. And it's really about figuring out kind of digital marketing and algorithms and Facebook ads and Google ads, which I think is interesting because a lot of people wouldn't connect the dots between that and gaming. And I know a lot of guys, especially young guys, are interested in video games. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe when you were young, you were really interested in video games and trying to figure out how to solve the puzzle and try to, like, you know, how to figure out the or how to beat the game. And you kind of took that interest in video games, and it was very similar to now your interest in digital marketing, because it's the same type of thing. You're trying to figure out how to achieve a certain objectives and analyze numbers and reverse engineer things. So anyway, so we've got the niche there, but then once you get the niche, then you need to decide what you're most comfortable with as far as video, which would be YouTube, audio, podcasting, or writing, which would be blogs. And then once you kind of hone in on what you're an expert at or what you enjoy doing, then you leverage that to create more content through that one kind of main pillar. Am I explaining that correctly?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And by the way, the whole gaming thing, I actually have this notepad over here. What's the vision? It's to level up the world, right? It's a very grand thing that I'll never accomplish in my lifetime. And that's what a vision slash, you know, mission is. And so we can talk about that later. When you talk about, yes, a pillar piece of content, we call it content sprouting. So for example, this video interview that we're doing right now, this can easily be chopped up into 10 or 15 different video segments that you put onto your YouTube. So Joe Rogan does a good job of chopping up his pieces because they are 2-hour videos, right? And then automatically these can become smaller audio segments too. You know, you push it to, you can push it to podcasts, but you push it to YouTube. You can also push it to your IGTV, all the different social profiles. And so the whole idea here is that one piece can now become 50 or 60 different pieces, right? You have an entire team working around it. And the goal now with social, when you're posting content, the problem is, you know, people have seen The Social Dilemma and all that. Yes, your attention is split. They're all trying to vie for your attention, right? Whether it's Netflix or Facebook or WhatsApp, whatever. So the idea here is you're aiming for reach. You want as much reach as you get, because it used to be in marketing that if you want people to take an action, so buy something, it would be the rule of 7, right? And there's a rule of 7 for investing, I guess, too. But so there's that. But what's now,
seven? Does that mean there's like 7 touch points required before someone psychologically is prepared to buy because they know, like, and trust you, or what is?
Yeah. So 7 impressions before someone takes an action. That's kind of the old marketing rule. I would argue it's maybe 14 or 21 now, just because our attention is so split.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Okay, I see. So the strategy is to take that one piece of content and try to leverage it to create more touch points. That's kind of the end objective. And I'd use this interview as another example. What I do is I have a gal in Medellin that takes my interviews and she transcribes them and turns them into a search engine friendly blog post. So for the listeners or viewers who are watching this now that have gone to my website and maybe seen a blog post, it's not me there writing it out. Trust me, you don't want to read anything I write. I'm the worst writer on earth, but I've got this gal, Maria, that takes these and then, you know, she knows English extremely well, transcribes them, and then she has been trained on how to insert keywords and titles and pictures to make it more friendly for the Google search engine. So that's an example. I'm not doing any extra work, none, zero. And what we're doing is we're creating another piece of content that is very search friendly, that can drive people to your website and get another touch point as a result. So, so let's just kind of really take it back and make it super basic. Let's walk through an example of just, we'll call them the average Joe. We'll call him Joe. And Joe is, he's watching this right now. Joe's maybe 35 years old. He's got a kid, he's got a wife, he's got a full-time job, but Joe is super interested in, let's say, we'll go with one of mine. We'll go with mid-90s Ford pickup trucks.
Yep.
So let's do this thought experiment with Joe and take him from the starting where he doesn't even have a website, he has nothing, he barely has an email address, to an online business that's making more than he's making at his current job.
Yeah.
So what does he do first?
Yeah, I'll use the example. So I'm a minority shareholder in a survival blog, and you actually met one of the people. Without sharing too many details, this is a multi-million dollar blog, which was started off with the topics around, making a fire, or, what type of body armor should you have for your children, or what happens if an EMP hits, right? That type of stuff, right? How do you build a bunker? So, yeah. So if you're doing, we're talking, pickup trucks, I think people that are interested in that want to get really technical, like what are cool add-ons we can have, or what are the best tools, I'm just making things up, what type of oil should I be using to optimize the mileage? I don't know. Right.
Especially with a diesel truck. Yeah. They're all about that for sure.
Yeah. So what you do in the very beginning is you write what you're interested in. So without thinking about SEO too much, right? SEO, content marketing, because it just starts to add all this cognitive load on your head. So you want to make it very simple. So for example, George, when you start talking about the repo market, you just start talking about whatever the macro stuff, it's what you're interested in, and people are going to seek you out. So in the very early days, you just focus on what you find interesting. I would say that when you're writing, if you're doing blog posts, if you want it to be searchable content, you generally want to have pieces that maybe are, 800 to 1500 words or so. So they're not very short pieces, because the old days of Google, where you could just write like a 200 word post and start to rank well on Google, that doesn't work anymore, right? So my point is, whether you're blogging,
what topic, let's just assume that Joe, he enjoyed writing more than he enjoyed like a podcast audio or a video. Mm-hmm. So he set up a blog. We got that. And that's pretty easy to do, very easy to do nowadays. Should he use Wix or WordPress, or what should he do for setting up the blog?
Great question. So in the tech world right now, people are pretty hot around this new CMS content management system called Webflow, and it allows you to build websites very quickly, and it looks damn good, almost like as if you paid someone 20 grand plus to build a website. Oh, wow. You can do that. You can certainly use Wix or Squarespace. I would just say you want to control your domain as soon as you can, right? So, we're getting a little in the weeds on the blog side of things, but if you do want to get started, there is actually, I believe on Neil's website, How to Start a WordPress Blog, there's a lot of resources on what to do, because it's like, okay, if you use WordPress, what plugins do you put in? What hosting should you use, right? There's just like all this stuff. But I think at a very high level, just thinking back to the content again, what content do I find interesting? What content would my readers find helpful? And then whether you're doing podcasts, videos, or whatever, you just keep going. And here's the thing. I'll share some numbers. This is kind of digressing a little bit. But for my first podcast, Leveling Up, after the first year, this is 7 years ago, by the way, I was only getting 9 downloads a day. And I would spend 6 hours a week on it while I was trying to save single ring. So stupid to split my intention. But I was learning a lot, talking to amazing people, such as yourself, just learning. Right. And, the second year, I was only getting 30 downloads a day. So 6 hours a week again, right? Totally, like, everyone from a numbers perspective, you should be like, Eric, you're an idiot, give up. Yeah. So my point of saying all this is that it takes time to compound. And now, collectively, or just combined with the two podcasts, about 1.6 million downloads a month, which is decent. It's not like Joe Rogan style, but you stick with it, right? So it's the same thing as investing. You stick with it, you let it compound. Same thing, I'll share some more numbers. The Single Grain blog, when I first took over the company, one of the main benefits was I would have this website that's aged, and I would be able to create content on it, and I'd be able to build it up. We're getting about 4,000 visits a month, which is okay. Now we're up to about 300,000 visits a month. And that took about 2.5-3 years to get that machine to really start compounding. And now, you know, we have enough authority on the website where whatever we tend to publish around marketing tends to rank pretty well. So we can go in a lot of different directions. I just wanted to share the key takeaway here is that it takes time to grow, just like any investment.
And it compounds, but you got to think of it compounding. I mean, you can't get discouraged if your blog is only getting, or your website is only getting 10 views a day, or your YouTube channel is only getting 100 views a day or something like that, because it's just, you know, you start with a penny, you double it, and at the end of the month, you've got, what, $1 million, you know, whatever that phrase is, or whatever that's...
You know what they say, too.
It's the exact same thing with this.
Yep.
So we've got Joe. He starts a blog. He's starting to write posts on what he's interested in. So maybe he's not as focused on keywords, but he's maybe more focused on what he likes, because that's most likely what his audience is going to want to read about. So how many posts is he doing per week? What is his goal? Is it 3 posts a week? Is it 2? Is it 5? Or what would you suggest?
I think the key thing to ask yourself is, what is everybody else doing right now? So how do you zig where everyone else is zagging, right? So let's give an example. So the Marketing School podcast is 5 to 10 minutes every single day. Again, it's a daily podcast. Nobody else was doing that at the time. Everyone else was doing interview podcasts.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, I already had an interview podcast. How can we be different, where you have two, not only marketers, but business people talking about and actually sharing their learnings. And we haven't missed an episode for about 4.5 years. And so that, by the way, when you do it that way on the podcasting side, you compound even faster because it's a daily thing. So that was a little different. I'll say for you, my hypothesis is that your YouTube has grown from 0 to 200K plus so quickly, because A, your videos are longer. They're a lot more thought through. There's a lot more preparation in it. And also the timing was perfect too, where you have people like me that are like, holy crap, got to do something right now. So, you know, it's the timing thing is a little bit of luck, but the other ones where you were just consistent and you prepared a lot and people are just like, it's different. And then every now and then you might have someone like Robert Kiyosaki mention it, and boom, spike, right? That's what it is. I think it's a little bit of luck, but a lot of consistency.
Okay, so maybe the takeaway there for Joe is, whatever you can do consistently, that's what you should start with. So if you're thinking about your schedule with your family and your work schedule and say, okay, right now I know for sure I could do 2 blog posts per week, then that's going to be your objective, if that's kind of your end marathon pace that you know that you can maintain. And if you could do 3, that's great, but you got to start with what's going to be realistic long term. Okay, so now you're writing your blog posts. You're probably frustrated for the first 6 months because you're on the Google Analytics and it's not showing that you're getting a huge spike in traffic. But from a mindset standpoint, you've got to stick with it, knowing that it's a long term game. And if you continue with that consistency we talked about, then it's going to compound and compound and compound. And then maybe over the next year, then the numbers double. But over the year after that, then they quadruple. And once they start going up, then what's the benefit to that? So, I mean, so what? So I've gone from getting 10 viewers per day up to 1,000. Why is that beneficial to me?
So a couple of things. Even before that, I think when you're first starting to create content, whether it's blog, audio, whatever, you have to think about the unsolicited response rate. So in the very early days, what was happening was that people would reach out to me, whether it's through email or leaving a review on the podcast saying, I don't know why this isn't getting more listens or downloads, but this is amazing. And that kept me going, right? At least you're getting the qualitative data there to keep you going, in addition to the learning. Yeah. And I think your question was around, okay, when you get to from 0 to 1,000 visits a month, what's the benefit, correct?
Or 5,000 or whatever, you know, what's the benefit of getting more and more views?
Yeah.
I mean, people would automatically will say, okay, I can monetize it. But then, I mean, how does that work on a blog? I mean, do you start advertising or, I mean, how does that even work? How do we connect those dots?
Yeah.
If our end goal is to either have a sustainable side hustle that can subsidize our job or give us more spending money, more disposable income, more security, or maybe even replace our existing job, give us a lot more personal freedom.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot that goes into that. I think the first thing is, if you're trying to replace your job, I think you have to set a certain number. Like once I hit this income, you know, with the side thing, I'm going to quit, right? Obviously, if you have family, you're going to have a discussion there. And by the way, with internet businesses, you know, my take on it is you end up getting a starter business or a launchpad business first, where let's say it's like an agency where you can kick out maybe $100,000 or $200,000 a year to cover your expenses up to $500,000 or so. And then, you know, you take that same idea with single run, you take that and you reinvest it in other areas or invest it in other areas. So, you know, and I might've digressed a little bit, but okay.
No problem. And that's great too, because people that are watching my videos, I mean, hopefully what's coming to their mind right now is even if I don't want this, we'll call it a side hustle, to replace my job, let's say I love my job, but you can take that extra $2,000 or $3,000 a month that's coming in, or five or whatever, and you can buy gold. You can buy Bitcoin. Right now, everyone knows I like commodities. So you might be able to do that. You might be able to buy some real estate. You might be able to save up that down payment for that rental property or something like that. That's why there's a benefit there. But let's go back to kind of monetizing. And when you're growing those views from 0 to 1,000 to 5,000 to 10,000, maybe go into the progression. I mean, do you start, let's say you got 1,000, do you start by creating a digital product or do you start by advertising? Is it different strokes for different folks? And then maybe we can go through some numbers that would, I know it's probably all over the map, but I was going to say, you know, people that you work with that are at 10,000 views per month, let's say, they have the ability to make, you know, this range of money. I think that's really important for people to know, because it seems so abstract for most people making money.
So online, I'll break it down this way instead. So, you know, one thing we should all think about when we're making an online business is that we should be collecting emails, because email is one channel that we can own. You know, you don't know if Facebook's going to ban you, Google's going to ban you, or Instagram is going to kick you off, whatever. So focusing on email collection is really important. And because you can blast, you can, you know, hit up your email list whenever you want, you know, give them more value. But also every you know, four times you provide value, you know, one time is you're asking for something, right? I'm just giving a rough, you know, template you can follow. So, you know, in general, the number back in the day, and I think this is still relevant, is for every email that you collect, you should be making at least $1 a month off of that email. So you collect 1,000 emails, maybe you're making $1,000 a month, right? You know, obviously, if you have like a finance newsletter and you have really smart people, you know, subscribing, you can probably charge a premium on it. But that's kind of a barometer there. Now, when you ask about visitors, it's different, right? Whether it's visitors, depends on the niche, because, you know, CPMs from an ad perspective, cost per thousand impressions, you know, varies, right? Same thing with YouTube ads as well. So what I would say is, you know, once you start to get a little bit of volume, you go from 0 to 5,000, I used to think, oh my God, it's time to monetize, right? But usually what I found was that, you know, the time to monetize is usually a lot longer than you think it is, right? So you start to get it going. Maybe you get up to 20,000, you know, 100,000. You're still not going to make a lot of money. So you might as well play the long game and not think about monetizing for, you know, 2 to 3 years or so. Because I'll tell you, with the Leveling Up podcast, I didn't monetize for 4 years. With the Marketing School podcast, and I'll be transparent, you know, Neil and I, just on that, the podcast advertising alone, we have a contract for about $800,000 a year, and that's all profit split between two people. And so, you know, we didn't take any, we didn't try to monetize any bit for 3.5 years.
How old did that podcast you do with
Neil? For about 4.5 years.
It's 4.5 years old.
Yeah. And we didn't monetize for about 3.5 years. So, you know, we didn't have our events. We didn't have our virtual events. We didn't have the ads. Now we have all that, and we can do even more because now we have volume. And we have a community now that's very vibrant. So, you know, all this to say is, you know, don't get ahead of yourself. That's the lesson there. Focus on collecting emails and then providing as much value as you can, and do it over a sustained period of time. And then all the money is going to come to you, because the most valuable thing you're going to have is a brand/community.
Yeah, and that's something that you've got for the long term. Yep. And another huge benefit is you can take it with you wherever you want to go. So. Yep. I've got a lot of buddies that fortunately they don't have an online business, but they're not tied to a 9-to-5 job. So here in Phoenix, when it got a little scary with the rioting and the looting, and we even had some of that in Scottsdale, they were just able to grab an RV and head up to the mountains and go up to Sholo or someplace, Prescott, and hang out for a while. They've got that flexibility. That's my point. And I do, especially today, I don't think you can put a price tag on that. So, okay. So for review, we start the blog, we start doing content, enough content to make sure that we can play the long game and we can maintain this marathon pace. I think that's the best way to look at it. And then we just focus on delivering as much value as we possibly can to the audience. And then we're not worrying about monetization because we know that that's going to take care of itself long term. We just focus on delivering value. And then after 3, maybe 4 years, now we've got this asset that we've created and this community. And throughout the whole time, we're driving people to an email list so that we've got those people that we're corresponding with directly through email. And then we try to ask ourselves, okay, how can I deliver even more value to my audience by creating some sort of product? You've got your email list, you let them know that it exists, and bam, you start the monetization process. And throughout this journey, at what point do you suggest bringing on like a virtual assistant or maybe someone to help you create the blog posts? And what's maybe the pros and cons of setting yourself up as the brand compared to the business? I know a lot of people don't think about that right away, but like my YouTube channel, George Gammon, my Twitter is George Gammon. It's all these things. So, I mean, how could I ever sell that business? I probably couldn't sell it to you because it's all about George Gammon, where if I would have called it Single Grain as an example, then maybe you've got some more optionality there long term. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, on that one, I mean, it's definitely much tougher. And Neil and I have talked about it on the Marketing School podcast. Funny enough, all his stuff is Neil Patel. His company is even Neil Patel Digital. So I think there's certainly a lot of value in having a personal brand. I think my take on it is I will always use it to, I can have a premium on that. I will generate great cash flows. And again, take the same playbook. I don't need to go out there and raise money. I'm raising money through my personal brand. You look at Tony Robbins, right? I think across all his companies, it's about $6 billion a year in sales, something like that. And he's got a personal brand. And so I don't know, Neil's mentioned before, it's like, you can't, but what about you have names in Michael Kors or Versace or whatever. I'm just making things up now. So I think there's a time and place for it. I feel like for most people right now, there is definitely space to become a micro influencer and build a personal brand. And I think if you're trying to build a company for long term, you probably want to use the company brand. But that's my take on it.
Okay. And what do you think about, we talked about YouTube for video, podcasting, and then blogs. What do you think about the other social media? Is that a waste of time or is there value there? And when I say other, I mean, not TikTok, just Instagram, Facebook, but like Snapchat and now TikTok and all these things. At what point is it just not a good use of your time?
Yeah. So I think, and by the way, we were talking about blogging quite a bit, but I want to caveat this because blogging is one of the most competitive things you'd be, dipping your toe in right now, because there's over a million blog posts being pumped out every single day. Now it's a red ocean, but if your industry is not as covered, so let's say it's around pets or let's say it's around survival, you have an edge because Google needs more of that content. Just like how Google has said in the past that they need more content in other languages. It's just, English has been quite filled up. But if you think you have an edge and you have something different to say, definitely, and you love writing, think about blogging or think about Twitter. You got to think about where your audience is hanging out.
What's the most open medium right now? If that's the most populated, the most open? Is it podcasting or YouTube or video?
Yeah. So, the red ocean right now would be blogging, but blue ocean would be podcasting. Because as of about a year and a half, 2 years ago, there are only 700,000 podcasts in the world versus over a billion blogs, right? And you look at the difference there. What did they say? A million is what, a couple weeks, 11 weeks or so. And then a billion is 31 years. So think about that difference. So podcasting is great. And if you're doing YouTube videos already, naturally you can convert it into podcast as well. So you might have two things right there.
Okay. So if you've got the ability to do audio, that might give you a leg up just right off the bat, or maybe even combine that with your other content. But going back to the social media stuff, like the TikToks and the Snapchats. And I mean, because a lot of people I know that get into this, like, okay, I'm going to do my blog posts and then I'm going to shoot it out on Instagram and Twitter and this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And it's like, dude, you're spending so much time on that. You could have created another two blog posts.
It's hard. It's, in the very beginning, I think, especially if we're just starting out a business, we're thinking about, oh, how can I do everything? You see everyone else, doing all these different things, but they're in their chapter 25, you're in their chapter one. So it's best to just focus initially and then get some traction. Feel like once you have something nailed down and you're scaling it, you can move on to the other stuff, right? Apple started out with a computer first. They didn't start out with the iPad. They didn't start out with, the iPhone and all that. So it's the same thing as business. It's just take your time. It takes a lot longer than you think it will. And the people that are ahead of you have been doing a lot longer. And that's what it is. You just got to stay patient with content, just like you stay patient with investing. So,
yeah, I think, I don't know who it was. It might've been Bill Gates. Most of my audience is a big fan of him, but I did like his, and I don't know if this is his quote or not. I think it was where he said, most people overestimate what they can accomplish in a year and wildly underestimate what they can accomplish in 5 years or something.
Yeah.
And I think that's very true.
That's basically it. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, for my viewers who want to find out more about what you do, your podcast, your digital marketing agency, maybe follow your story. I don't know if you're documenting the process with your macro journey in Act 2022. Where can they go to check that out?
Yeah. I mean, you can go to levelingup.com. So actually my book's coming out in February. It's going to be a hardcover book, business book, and you can get the first chapter over there. Also there's a Leveling Up podcast or the YouTube where I am going to be documenting a journey. We're going to call the series Journey to 100 Million. It's a very tacky title, very but cool. I think it'll do well. So yeah, those are the ways. And then, you can find all the other stuff through those mediums.
Awesome, Eric. Thank you for your time. And I can't wait to do it again.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.